Welcome to season 4 of the To Health With That podcast, where we break up big health topics into small bites. I'm your host, naturopathic doctor Amy Neuzel, and this season we'll dive into something we are all familiar with, fatigue. What is it? Why does it happen? Most importantly, how can we fix it outside of this? Coffee. Also, you can enjoy the video version of this podcast on YouTube. The channel is at To Health With That. Can't wait to see you there. This week, let's talk about fatigue and depression. These two complex syndromes have a terrifyingly circular relationship, often blending seamlessly into each other, where it's difficult to tell where one ends and the other begins. I have so many clients come to me with depression, but the symptoms aren't really to do with sadness. It's lack of energy, lack of motivation, lack of interest. It is depression, but it's also fatigue. Lots of people who come in saying they're fatigued look exactly the same, and many of them report an accompanying sadness or loss of interest. Even for your doctor, it can be difficult to find the dividing, and many people are being treated for one without truly addressing the other. Depression and fatigue dovetail into each other, and looking at them as intermixed problems can be helpful in terms of finding novel treatment strategies. We tend to think of the mind as one thing and the body as another, but the exciting thing is that the environment of your mind and your body are intermixed. We think of depression as a neurotransmitter problem only, but in reality, it's much bigger than that. Neurotransmitters are involved, of course, but so are cytokines, inflammatory molecules, oxidative stress, and so much more. The most common conventional drug-based therapies for depression center around neurotransmitters, but none of the other physiological changes are usually addressed. Some antidepressants, like disopyramine and fluoxetine, do have anti-inflammatory activity, but it isn't their primary focus. In the first episode of the season, we talked about something called sickness behavior, which is the symptoms your body generates in response to a virus, a pathogen, a big injury, that basically force you to act like a sick person and go to bed. In the context of a virus, it makes complete sense. You may have noticed, however, that depression and sickness behavior have a lot in common. Turns out, they have a lot in common on a molecular level as well. Many of the cytokines, or signaling molecules, that your body releases during sickness behavior are also elevated in depression, which helps account for the massive symptom overlap. Both states involve deep fatigue, listlessness, lack of interest in social activities, slower thinking, reduction of activity, reduction of exploration, even reduction of grooming, lack of enjoyment, and sleepiness. The fact that the chemistry of the two states is similar may give us new treatment targets for depression and fatigue in the future. Symptoms of depression that are not linked to these inflammatory cytokines include actual sadness, feelings of guilt or low self-esteem, and suicidal thoughts or ideation. Still, shared pathways might underpin both states. Fatigue by itself is also taxing to our mental and emotional health, possibly through the cytokines that we mentioned, but possibly also because feelings of being unable, right, for a long period of time is kind of crippling to the human psyche. It's easy to interpret your own lack of energy or lack of clear-headedness as a personal failure, to feel guilty, unworthy, or sad because of it. Sickness behavior does have the hallmark symptom of fever, which is not typically present in depression, although studies have shown randomly that those with depression are likely to have a slightly higher body temperature than those without, possibly due to those same inflammatory molecules. To make things more complicated, inflammatory cytokines have been shown to affect levels of different neurotransmitters, including serotonin and norepinephrine. To add to this, I would like to posit my own theory, which is your resting normal neurotransmitter level. So I believe, although cannot prove through research, that there is a resting normal neurotransmitter level for most people that also influences the conversation, and that gene SNPs have a profound impact on that level. For example, many people like myself with slow COMT polymorphisms could be described as terminally cheerful. Depression in this group is likely to look very different from depression in a group with fast COMT function, who tends to have a lower resting neurotransmitter level and less general chirpiness. Resting normal neurotransmitter levels are part of the reason why I think so many people try antidepressants, go through an adjustment reaction, feel amazing for a few months, and then slowly sink back to where they were. The natural consequence is to keep chasing that amazing feeling with dosage changes, medication changes, and that sort of thing, but their body always seems to bring them back to their baseline. For a more detailed discussion about this theory, check out Season 1, Episode 49, or the linked blog post about neurotransmitters working as a web rather than as a tug of war. So it's all well and good to say fatigue and depression overlap significantly, blah, blah, blah. But what do we actually do about it? Well, this is still a question, and we don't 100% know the answer. But research in this area gets nested under treatment-resistant depression, which is what doctors call depression when antidepressants don't work. Some of the therapeutic strategies for this include ketamine, which has become controversial because of its misuse as a street drug, and new drug candidates that are being researched, especially those that inhibit glutamate, which is an excitatory neurotransmitter. In my own opinion, unbacked by research though it is, depression and fatigue treatments should also overlap, with some attention paid to both the inflammatory process in the body and mind, as well as to changes in the neurotransmitters. Interestingly, many of the natural substances that show good effect for depression are also extremely powerful antioxidants, which suggests that part of the reason why they're working is because of that overlap. Some of those include saffron. This is a bright yellow spice. It's been well documented for depression, but also it's an incredibly potent antioxidant, like other bright yellow spices. Fish oils are a commonly used natural remedy for both depression and inflammation, pretty equally. Vitamin D. Low levels of vitamin D have been implicated in depression, and also vitamin D is actually an antioxidant. St. John's wort, which is an herbal medicine, has long been used for depression, but studies show it also inhibits inflammatory signaling. The research that I saw was specifically on pre-diabetic inflammatory signaling. Creatine is a common supplement for exercise performance and muscle development, but it's also shown some promise in reducing depression, inflammation, and oxidative stress. And N-acetylcysteine, or NAC. I've spoken a million times about the benefits of NAC as a precursor to glutathione, which is your master antioxidant, which therefore lowers inflammation and oxidative stress. But it's also a glutamate inhibitor, which means research is ongoing about the use of NAC for depression. While I don't suggest that you run out and start taking every supplement under the sun, I am very much against that, I do think it's important to consider your whole body in the treatment of either fatigue or depression, and your mind in the treatment of fatigue and depression, and to potentially include support that overlaps to both. Research is also, just for interest, looking into novel drug therapies based on plant medicines and other existent drugs that don't target the more conventional neurotransmitter pathways. I do want to mention some of those therapies just because they have high potential. Two of the studies ongoing on plant medicines include psilocybin from hallucinogenic mushrooms and ayahuasca from the plant medicine of the same name, which is actually an herbal mixture. I have an enormous amount of respect for traditional plant medicines and have heard and witnessed incredible stories of transformation. These plant medicines have been used for centuries by people suffering from mental health disorders, spiritual and emotional crises, grief, and even physical disorders. And even with our cultural fear of what we think of as recreational drugs, it's hard to deny centuries of success. Nitrous oxide is also being studied as a treatment for depression with daily use, I guess at home, and is the subject of several ongoing phase 1 and phase 2 clinical trials. Remember, MTHFR folks, this one is not a good option for us because nitrous oxide is known to raise histamine levels sharply and can become dangerous with MTHFR. And especially, I wouldn't want to see that long-term kind of use. Thank you so much for watching or listening today. Remember to like, subscribe, download, make your offerings to appease the YouTube or podcast preference. I would appreciate it.